and welcome to this video module. My name is Guy Young. I'm a pediatric hematologist, the director of the Hemostasis and Thrombosis Center at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, and a professor of pediatrics at the University of Southern California, Keck School of Medicine. With me on this video module are Maya Bloomberg. Maya is a nurse practitioner, expert in hemophilia, works at the Hemophilia Treatment Center at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. And as well, we have James T. Kenny, pharmacist and MBA as well. And you can see he's the president of J.T. Kenny Company, and he's the president of the Academy of Managed Care Pharmacy. The learning objective here is to develop a team-based approach to integrate shared decision-making and patient education to improve access to appropriate therapies. So we're going to review this important area of shared decision-making. This is kind of a catchphrase. It's probably something that providers are all doing already, but we're going to give you some structure to it so that perhaps you can improve upon the way that you're doing that. So let me start with the fact that, you know, in a comprehensive care, multidisciplinary team in hemophilia, as we have in hemophilia treatment centers, we have different people participating, different experts, different disciplines. You can see in the slide here, you've got a variety of different specialists involved, and the patient is at the center. And so, you know, I call this patient-centered care, where we've got experts in different areas, all aimed at doing the best we can to provide the patient not just the best care, but also the best experience with their care. Mr. Kenny, why is patient-centered care important to payers?
Well, from a payer perspective, certainly coordinated care leads to better outcomes and ideally reduces total cost of care. And if we think about the hemophilia treatment center as a critical part of that process and the care management staff at the plans, it promotes that ideal situation where we're going to have strong care coordination and ultimately a better response from patients to the various treatment options that could be employed. And patients and caregivers also have to be engaged in the process. And I think that's very effective when you have a coordinated care team involving both providers, physicians, nurses, pharmacists, all the providers, if you will, in the care management team offering that coordinated care approach.
Okay, thank you. And then Maya, can you really get into the details now and discuss what shared decision making really, what it means, what it actually is?
Sure. So shared decision making is defined as an approach where clinicians and patients share the best available evidence when faced with the task of making decisions and where patients are supported to consider options to achieve informed preferences. So we're having a shift of clinicians making decisions on behalf of patients to actually an approach where clinicians and patients make decisions together using the best available evidence. It really is empowering the patient and focus on patient-centered care. We're recognizing and respecting their values. We're educating the patients to understand their medical conditions and different outcomes, going over different treatment options, the risks and the benefits associated with that. And we really strive to empower the patients by providing them with that knowledge necessary to help them make a decision with regards to their treatments while respecting their beliefs and values.
Okay, Maya, thank you for that explanation on the principles of shared decision making. And Mr. Kenny, can you talk about shared decision-making in hemophilia care?
Well, certainly disease management is a core of the approach to achieving good outcome, and shared decision-making as a piece of that, or coordination of care, as we talked about, are going to be critical factors to drive those good outcomes. And the hemophilia treatment centers do provide that comprehensive care across all aspects of the disease process, including comorbidities and social issues. And as Meyer said, getting the patient actively involved in that process is going to lead to better results and better outcomes.
Okay, thank you. And then Maya, can you get into even more detail now? Can you show us, you know, what are some of the models of shared decision making, and how can, you know, the audience who are taking care of patients with hemophilia, how do they actually apply these principles in the clinic?
So there are many shared decision making models that are available for any center to adopt, but one of the ones I'll be presenting today is this one here called the three talk model of shared decision making, where the first step is called team talk, where the provider actually introduces the concept of choice and that patients, in fact, have choices available. The second is option talk, where the provider describes the differences between the options available and really supporting the patient to think about those different options. And then the last one is decision talk, where we speak with the patients and explore their preferences, decide what their goals are, and ultimately create that decision with the help of the patients for what's best for them. When you're using this model, it's important to make sure you're checking for the patient's reactions, making sure that they really understand the information that you're presenting to them with regards to harms and risks, and understand that if a patient doesn't necessarily want to be involved in the decision-making at this point in time, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to want to be later on. So again, just keeping the patient informed, making sure they're aware of the different choices, understand the choices, and really involving patient preference and their goals using this model. The second approach is the SHARE approach, and you can see the acronym on the left-hand side, what it stands for, but it's a five-step process of shared decision-making that includes exploring and comparing the benefits, harms, and risks of each option through meaningful dialogue and what matters most to the patient. There's a lot of benefits to both the healthcare provider and the patients, but one thing to point out is that it has been shown to have improved patient adherence to treatment recommendations at the end of the day. Now, with the growing number of treatment options for patients with hemophilia, decision-making is becoming more and more complex, and it requires a lot of considerations towards benefits, risks, and the patient goals. There's really no evidence-based best treatment option. Therefore, patient preference is a big impact for what decision these patients are going to choose for their therapy. We must advocate for individualized treatment plans for patients, which focus on patient-specific aspects, which could be their age or activity level, any adherence issues. Also take into account disease-specific aspects, such as their bleeding phenotype. Are they moderates, but they bleed like a severe, for example, and what their joint status is. Different factor-specific aspects, such as their PK profile. Maybe these patients are metabolizing products very quickly or having frequent infusions despite that, and most importantly, the cost-effectiveness of the treatment option.
Okay, thank you. Back to the payer perspective, managed care puts a lot of emphasis on care coordination. We talked earlier about the role of the team and how it's important to work together. So, Mr. Kenny, can you give us your perspective on that?
Sure. Without question, the clinical team is going to lead the process for that care coordination. And the plans really have to provide appropriate benefits, good coverage criteria, and access to best-in-class products. That being said, they don't necessarily have to provide access to all products. So again, it's trying to find that balance of an appropriate list of products that are going to achieve what's required to treat the patients in the plan's benefit design. Clearly, personnel from both within the plan, if it's care managers or outside the plan, if it's hemophilia treatment center staff or specialty pharmacy staff, need to coordinate effectively to successfully care for these patients.
And Maya, we talked about shared decision-making, so shared means, of course, shared between the patient and the provider, but the patients obviously need to have some education in order to be participating in these decisions about their care. So can you discuss the importance of patient education for shared decision-making?
Definitely. So again, shared decision-making, it has been shown to have a positive impact. We're seeing better adherence, better patient satisfaction, and overall higher quality of care being provided. And best practices is that multidisciplinary approach and comprehensive care involving a lot of different healthcare providers, like the hematologists, the nurses, social workers. And social workers and psychologists is a group of professionals that I feel like might not be on everybody's radar, but including these patients in the care can really help with engaging those adolescents and young adults, and also help patients who might not necessarily be at that same developmental level. Because we need to educate our patient and provide patients with information in an understandable manner and reinforce and review this information at each contact. You have to take into account their developmental stage, their health literacy, their cultural background, because without adequate and appropriate patient education, shared decision-making essentially isn't possible. So we really want to provide patient education at a level and an understandable manner for these patients so they can be involved and ultimately be able to advocate for themselves and their health.
Thank you. And then back to the payer perspective, obviously all of this treatment we talk about and shared decision making doesn't really work unless the patient adheres to the treatment. What are the strategies for promoting patient adherence?
Well, certainly plans very much encourage our patients to be adherent to therapies, but we don't typically have staff that can be dedicated to manage the patients directly. Now, in a disease like hemophilia, We do have the ability to have case managers and some of the specialty pharmacies help drive that adherence. And obviously that's going to be focused on those very high need patients or those who've had challenges in the past, because clearly there's significant clinical and financial risk due to poor adherence in the hemophilia space. Another area we've seen that has helped focus more attention on adherence is outcomes contracts. And certainly as we get into some of these gene therapies that may be coming to market, there may be some outcomes-based opportunities to look at whether or not these drugs are effective, but also to compare what happens with patients on a gene therapy versus those who may have been on a standard therapy. But clearly adherence is removed if someone gets a single gene therapy treatment and doesn't need to continue on a prophylactic agent. So without question, adherence is important, and we rely on the providers, the nurses, other practitioners, case managers, specialty pharmacies, anyone else in the chain who can help us drive better adherence are going to be viewed quite favorably by the plan and certainly well supported.
All right, thank you. And that, now we come to a really important point as well, which is besides patient education, once that part is handled, there also has to be effective communication with the patient. So Maya, can you discuss with us enhancing provider-patient communication?
Sure. This is a really important part because a lot of our patients who are doing well in their current therapy, they might not see us and steps annually, and a lot can happen in that 1 year. So I think keeping patients in the loop and just maintaining communication with them is very important. This could be regarding new treatment options or insurance issues. If you have any concerns or feedbacks or new research happenings, I think keeping that patient informed is ultimately going to benefit both them and you as their provider. So strategies to enhance this communication involve, you could do periodic phone calls or emails, depending what level of comfort you have with that in between the clinic visits. Our HTC has a quarterly newsletter which focuses on current happenings in the hemophilia community, either globally, nationally, or locally, any hot topics or research. It's been a really nice way to keep our patients informed with what's going on. And there's also different outreach programs for patients that cover a various amount of topics. These could be put on by the HT itself or by local chapters, or even some manufacturers will sponsor different programs that focus on aging or pain, different topics that way that you can keep a patient engaged and stay in touch with the hemophilia treatment center outside of those clinic visits.
All right, thank you. And then we'll close with just final comments from each of you regarding online resources and education tools. There's obviously a lot of information online, some of it good, some of it less good, I can say that, some of it not good. So maybe we'll start with Mr. Kenny and then go to Ms. Bloomberg. Tell us your thoughts from your perspectives on how online resources can be utilized in an effective way. So maybe first Mr. Kenny, and then after that Ms. Bloomberg, you can close with that your perspective. Thank you.
Well, health plans certainly promote patient education and use of online tools and resources, and those that come from the hemophilia treatment centers or specifically from the National Hemophilia Foundation are going to be viewed as quite credible. We're going to rely primarily on the care managers, especially pharmacy, as well as the individual treating providers to make sure patients are aware of these resources and theoretically have sort of validated and vetted those that are going to be better than others. And to your point, we want to avoid ones that are not necessarily going to provide good information or credible information. But again, if we focus on the HTCs and NHF, we're going to be quite confident that those are valid and viable resources that are going to help our patients manage these complex cases.
Then Maya, how do you handle when patients either come in with online information that may be accurate or not, and then how do you recommend using the online resources that may be available for your patients from your nurse practitioner perspective?
Sure. Well, I'll say that not all patients will come in saying that they've used online. So if you have patients coming in with specific information, it's helpful because you can kind of direct the conversations that way. But I think it's also important to assess a patient and ask them, what are they looking online? What are they hearing? So you can kind of balance the information, because there's a lot of negative chatter with certain treatment options and might not necessarily be factually based. So I think, again, close communication with the patients, and you can kind of steer them in the right direction and provide them with the information that's actually factual in order to prevent them from deterring from wanting to use a specific product is important. I think the chapters, the HTCs, NHF are all great resources. And I think just ongoing assessment and seeing what information they're hearing and just making sure that it is sound information. I personally like being the one to provide the information. So if they do hear anything negative or outside being said in the community, they at least are equipped with that knowledge and that power to know what's factual and what might be false.
Great. Thank you very much. So I'll just close by looking at the SMART goals for this section, video module, which is about how to implement strategies for improving shared decision-making, patient education to provide the best patient-centered care. And I'd like to thank our two speakers, Ms. Bloomberg, Mr. Kenny, and our viewers for participating. So thank you very much. Bye-bye.